And so we've been asking questions, how do we support these very important, whether we frame it from, you know, workforce needs, workers, you know, today industry needs agile workers who are, you know, really confident and competent at solving problems, carrying out big plans, being collaborative, using feedback. I mean, how do we accomplish that in the context of a curriculum that has a very broad scope? And those are the biggest questions that we're answering currently within the context where I work. And it's exciting because we're developing skills frameworks to align to our standards-based curriculum and really trying to emphasize problem solving, creativity, critical thinking, collaboration, and discourse. And really the discourse and the collaboration really trying to emphasize the importance of equity and inclusion in that particular context to ensure that we are ready for this pluralistic society that's here.
Hi, this is Edie. Welcome to The Dispatch, a Heinemann podcast series. Over the next several weeks, we'll hear from Heinemann thought leaders as they discuss the most pressing issues in education today. In today's episode, we hear from Heinemann author Kristen Bordage about designing instruction that deepens learning to prepare students for meeting the challenges of life with creativity, problem solving, and inquiry. Our conversation begins with Kristen's reflection on her tenure in education.
So you're in K-12 education right now.
Yeah, I've had a journey. So I started out teaching. Language arts literacy was my home base originally out of college, and then came to Columbus, Ohio for Ohio State's doctoral program, became a teacher educator of literacy. And this is my fourth year in a return to K-12. So I was in higher ed about 20 years altogether. I think I'm at 28 or 29 years in education. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey and just a fabulous tenure. My role now is I'm a curriculum and instruction administrator at Olentangy Schools, which is a suburb north of Columbus.
How's that been going back to K-12 from higher ed?
You know, it's been amazing because I think that 20 years preparing teachers, which was my primary role, really supported a depth of understanding of teaching and learning. Like when you have to teach something, you know it really well. And when you do so for, you know, year after year, you just continue to deepen that knowledge and grow that knowledge base. And so I'm bringing that back to this role where I'm supporting and leading curriculum initiatives in the district. And it's been great because I feel very flexible with our decisions that we make and the teams that we convene, in part because I kind of know where we're headed. Okay. I'm not always trying to figure it out as we're doing it. Like it's like I feel there's a level of confidence there due to the 20 years of really studying pedagogy very deeply.
So what are the pressing issues you're thinking about with your colleagues and individually and sort of talking about over and over again right now in education?
Currently, we're really trying to understand how we deepen learning. So, you know, the last, I'd say 10 or 15 years with standards-based initiatives and evaluation initiatives, assessment, achievement, all of those parts of what it means to learn in school today created, you know, widening of the curriculum, which had a cost, and that's deeper learning, really trying to emphasize creativity, problem solving, inquiry. Those transfer skills that we want to see are really hard to manage in the context of our current curriculum, at least locally. And so we've been asking questions, how do we support these very important, whether we frame it from, you know, workforce needs, workers, you know, today industry needs agile workers who are, you know, really confident and competent at solving problems, carrying out big plans, being collaborative, using feedback. I mean, how do we accomplish that in the context of a curriculum that has a very broad scope? And those are the biggest questions that we're answering currently within the context where I work. And it's exciting because we're developing skills frameworks to align to our standards-based curriculum and really trying to emphasize problem solving, creativity, critical thinking, collaboration and discourse, and really the discourse and the collaboration really trying to emphasize the importance of equity and inclusion in that particular context to ensure that we are ready for this pluralistic society that's here.
Do you feel good about the progress you're making in that direction,
as a team? Teachers are excited about it. I think when I ask the question, like, what do our learners need the most? Mm-hmm. The answer is almost always related to those transfer skills or those long-term skills or skills that we want all of our children to have when they finish school.
As humans.
Humans, you know, like whether it's, you know, kindness, I haven't mentioned kindness, but empathy is a part of what we're trying to achieve, you know, in that context of being more collaborative, being stronger at communication and really communication across differences so that we're really ensuring that we have humans that really want to not just work together. I mean, oftentimes in K-12 settings, we're thinking about that future goal of whether it's university as an intermediate step toward a career or just being good people. And I know that sounds sort of, I don't know, maybe, you know, basic or just like, but empathy does matter. And it is a big part of the frameworks that we're using to redesign some of the curriculum around these transfer skills that matter for work and life.
Yeah. No, it doesn't sound basic. Yeah. And it's when you get into that, it's hard work, you know, when you get specific about it.
Yeah, because we can be, again, our structures demand that we focus on achievement.
Mm-hmm, right.
And achievement is aligned to cognition. Great. Like, that's our business. But when we really start to think about what really matters for children, for learners, for people, we start to think about these other aspects of a well-rounded experience and becoming equipped for whatever it is a learner wants to do. So that's what we're doing. It's exciting to me because I love curriculum. My curriculum brain is always very alive when I'm working
fire.
With teachers. Yeah, it's on fire when we're working with teachers and talking about, like, we're working on a project right now with social studies teachers, and we're really trying to understand where does historical inquiry fit, again, in a curriculum that has a lot of demands from the scope and the breadth of what learners need to know in social studies, and where does historical inquiry fit? And asking that question is exciting for all of us, because we know that that's what matters most, is that inquiry skills are, you know, transcend anything we can do in one particular class and one particular grade level.
I'd love to hear a little bit about, like, that inquiry project you're talking about that you're working with your group, like what that looks like in the classroom with the students.
For us, it's looking through the lens of inquiry as a historian might look at documents. My background, by the way, is not social studies, or I'm not trained as a historian, but really using that lens of inquiry as a historian would look at documents. So asking big questions, looking at primary sources, secondary sources, really deriving a claim from the evidence, trying to understand what's fact, what's opinion. Those are vital skills in social studies curriculum and in inquiry process. And building onto that, you know, what's misinformation, what's disinformation, like we're tackling some of those questions within the inquiry process as students derive a claim from exploring evidence that in social studies is largely text-based, doesn't always have to be, but in social studies it is, and then really supporting their claims with strong evidence and other kinds of reasons.
Thank you for sharing your thinking about students holistically and deepening knowledge. So
yeah,
I appreciate that.
Thanks.
So I'm going to pivot a little bit now.
Okay, sure.
I'd like to know what your influences are right now. What's on your bookshelf?
Okay, so I am really interested in Mayan culture right now because I'm taking a trip.
And
I'm reading a memoir. I'm sorry, I need to refresh my memory on the author's name. It's Sastun is the name of the text, and it's Rosita Arvigo. And she is writing about her life learning from Mayan culture in the 1980s. She's American.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it's just been interesting because there's a lot of plant biology in it as she's learning from this Mayan medicine practices, medical practices, and she's trying to make connections to what she knows about Western medicine, American versions of how we treat and support. And it's just been really interesting. And, you know, anytime I'm reading, I'm always thinking about my role and my work. And yeah, and so it's just been interesting to think about different topics and reminds me of just the power of all kinds of ways of knowing. Like, so I think that's what the memoir really helps me understand is just that, you know, we have one version, but then there's this version where she studied for years and years with this Mayan medical shaman. I'm not sure. She uses different labels. And so for me, it's like, you know, there's lots of ways of knowing and how do we capture that within our own discipline, in this case of education.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. When's your trip?
It's coming up in December.
It is? Oh, okay. Yeah, it's right around the corner.
Yeah.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah, so, and then in terms of education, you know, I have been reading a lot recently about contact zones, which a modern language professor spoke about and wrote about in the 90s. This is an older concept dug out for NCTE and presenting at NCTE. So I've been doing a ton of reading about contact zones and the research around contact zones. Contact zones are sites, any social space or social site where cultures interact and grapple. And it's fascinating work because in the 90s, she was writing about what we need today. Sort of, you may have needed it then, but now it's like, okay, what do we do when we interact with people who are different from ourselves, which is the NCT theme this year. And she talks about grappling is the reality. It's what we do with the grappling that matters. And so
how we enter the process, right?
How do we move through this idea if you are interacting with someone who has a very different worldview, let's say, just as an example, like how do you move through that tension? She says there's going to be tension there. And it's what you do with that tension and how you move through it in a way that is productive. She said on the other side of that is a revelation. Like you have an experience where you have a deeper understanding, whether it's through empathy or an aha moment, like you understand something more deeply. And so, worked with a team of teachers and teacher educators to understand our classroom with the lens of contact zones. So I know it's not something that I've followed on social media because this is an older construct, but it's been just really interesting work. And we presented yesterday and it was just great. Just
good.
The process has been wonderful and teachers are super excited that they were able to present and share this, share this work.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my last question for you today.
Okay.
So when you look across the spectrum of education right now and your own experiences right now, what is giving you hope?
Well, for me at NCTE, there are thousands of teachers here who are excited about their work and their calling, their passion, and supporting learners in all kinds of ways, but certainly in English language arts and literacy. But, you know, I've had our teams from our school district texting me routinely, just with hearts and smiley faces and just the enthusiasm is palpable and exciting for me because that's what gives me the greatest hope in that we can move through some of these complex ideas like what I was talking about before with redesigning curriculum, with really drilling down and finding these competencies that matter and that transcend the content. And if they're excited about it, it's going to happen. It just moves a little slowly, but there's a big, it's a big system and there's a lot of learners, a lot of teachers, a lot of schools, and that's what gives me hope.
What's the makeup of your teacher body right now in terms of like new teachers, veteran?
Yeah. So the district where I work, we have roughly 2,000 teachers.
Yeah.
So it's a large district, relatively speaking. I think it's the fourth largest in the state of Ohio. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me. I haven't fact checked that, but I think it's right around the fourth largest. And, you know, we have a healthy mix. It's a newer set of communities. So there are younger families moving in. And so there are a mix of teachers with fewer than 10 years, but then there are teachers who have been there for a long time. One of the challenges that we have, not just locally, but here in Ohio generally, is recruiting teachers of color to meet the needs of our very diverse demographic. There are schools in the Columbus area, certainly Columbus City Schools, which is our largest district here, but, you know, 40, 50% students of color with 90% white teachers. And so that is a challenge that the state is addressing with actionable steps with, you know, grow your own programs, recruiting teachers of color into the teaching workforce. So that's really exciting locally.
Thank you for tuning in today. For more information and a full transcript, please visit blog.heinemann.com.